Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Thursday, May 14th. I'm your reader, Carrie Craig. Start with the front page of the Gazette, the headline article, Opening for Business. Soon you can dine out, work out, and get your hair cut. This is by Allison Gowans for the Gazette. Restaurants scramble toward reopening doors. It takes a lot of work to scale down a restaurant's operations, as thousands of business owners across Iowa did when they were ordered closed March 17th to dine-in service to combat the spread of the coronavirus. And it takes a lot of work to scale back up after nearly 2 months, especially when they need a whole new operations plan first. Jordan Cavaness, co-owner and operator of several area restaurants, including Sam's Pizza and Mr. B's Bar, Stadium Bar and Grill, Mulligan's Pub and Vito's on 42nd in Cedar Rapids, as well as Shuey's Restaurant and Lounge in Shueyville. In a quote, Jordan said, "It's like opening a new place all over again, except you have to do it more quickly," end quote. After an announcement Wednesday by Governor Kim Reynolds that restaurants here could reopen as of 5 a.m. Friday, joining restaurants already allowed to reopen in 77 other counties, Cavaness and his team members were scrambling to figure out how to do so while meeting the social distancing guidelines also in the order. Those include requirements that restaurants operate at half capacity, limit party sizes to 6 people or fewer, seat parties 6 feet apart, and eliminate self-serve options such as salad bars and buffets. In quotes, Jordan Cavaness said, "It's very short notice to get everything done, but we're doing our best. We're going to try to open as soon as long as we can do it safely and meet the requirements. Some places may have to wait a couple of days to open until we can get all the food and alcohol orders in. As soon as we can safely do it and keep our staff safe and our customers safe, we'll do it," end quote. At Cedar River Landing, manager Joab Uppa and his staff were busy moving tables Wednesday to make up a new socially distanced seating area. The business has been closed completely since March 17th. He said It tried carry out the first week, but was losing money at it. In quotes, he said, "All our bills kept coming in, so it was becoming a strain financially. Even at 50%, we can start having something come in and get some of our regulars back in," end quote. Normally, the bar and restaurant also is a live music venue, but that part is on hiatus. "It would be too much of a challenge to monitor crowd sizes," Uppa said. Justin Zair, co-owner of LP Street Food and Moco Game Room and Hot Dog Bar in Cedar Rapids, said he and business partner Tim Kindle need time to figure out the logistics before reopening LP Street Food to dine-in customers on Wednesday. In quotes, he said, "Our main concern is making everyone safe, and the next one is surviving as a business and being profitable. It's very limiting. If you were to create a business model off 50% of your seats, you wouldn't be staying open. It's a regulation that's designed to make us fail," end quote. He said carryout business has been going well at LP Street Food, but Moco hasn't been open at all since the shutdown. Most of the business there comes from drinks, though it has a small kitchen. Staff were in the process of a deep clean Wednesday, preparing to reopen for at least carryout, while the owners decided whether reopening for dine-in at half capacity would make financial sense. In quotes, he said, "With this, we are now put in a position where we have to create another position to manage this, maybe a hostess we didn't have," he said. "We're not only managing a restaurant, we're managing all these other moving parts. It's tough water to navigate," end quote. They've made modifications at both locations and at Kindle's other business, Bricks, adding touchless sinks and hand dryers, hand sanitizer stations at each table, and even foot-operated mechanics to open doors. In quotes, Zair said, "Anything that can minimize touching things," end quote. At Popoli Restaurant and Sullivan's Bar in Cedar Rapids, that includes adding touchless menus. Managing partner Judy Villafana said the operators worked with food supplier Cisco Foods on the menus, which use a QR code that customers can scan with their smartphones or tablet to read the menu on their own devices. They also will have single-use paper menus for those who prefer them. In quotes, he said, "We've been spending the last 10 days or so working on getting all the safety and sanitation systems in place to make sure we can provide the best and safest experience for our guests and our staff," end quote. He said business has been challenging for the restaurant, which normally relies heavily on business travelers and catering events and weddings, all of which have evaporated. However, it has had success with curbside pickup and virtual wine dinners and events where guests pick up their meals and wine to go and then follow along with a video at home. Those options will continue, he said. In quotes, he said, "We're aware there's a portion of the population that will prefer that over coming in," end quote. Not every restaurant is ready to reopen, with numerous places posting on Facebook they would stick to carryout orders for the time being. Anna McLean, the co-owner of Lion Bridge Brewing Company in Cedar Rapids, said in quotes, "We decided not to reopen for now. Over the next couple of weeks, we'll be coming up with new policies and new plans, and bringing in the staff one by one to go over the new training. Then we will feel a lot more ready for this new world," end quote. The governor's order excludes bars, which must remain closed. Bars are defined in the order as places where, in quotes, "the serving of food is incidental to the consumption of those beverages and is limited to the service of ice, snack foods, and the reheating of commercially prepared foods, such as frozen pizza, prepackaged sandwiches, or other prepackaged ready-to-serve products," end quote. And also from the front page, "Salons, eager to style again, set new rules." This is by Kat Russell for the Gazette. "After 2 months of that coronavirus cut, remember this. Your hairstylist is a beautician, not a magician. Starting Friday, salons and barbershops across the state will be allowed to once again bring a professional flair to those do-it-yourself root touch-ups and bowl cuts that Iowans have had to endure since March 17th. Nadia Hamaden, owner of Nadia's Salon and Spa at 3210 Centerpoint Road Northeast in Cedar Rapids, said in quotes, "We are very excited to be back. Our clients have waited for us for 2 months, and they have been supportive of us this whole time. So we are very happy to be able to offer services again," end quote. During her daily briefing Wednesday, Governor Kim Reynolds announced the easing of restrictions on a host of businesses she had ordered closed or sharply limited as the state sought to slow the spread of the novel coronavirus. Tattoo parlors, massage businesses, and gyms also were given the statewide go-ahead. But as with the other businesses, hair salons and barbershops were ordered to adhere to safety precautions. They cannot exceed half capacity, must operate by appointment only, and keep customers at least 6 feet apart. Some salons said they'd go further. Hamaden said her salon will reopen Monday. For the rest of the week and over the weekend, she and her staff will be training on new protocols and sanitation procedures, she said. A 15-page sanitation guidebook outlines new protocols for the staff. The steps Hamaden has outlined are extensive and include new procedures for everything from greeting and working with clients to sanitizing stylist chairs, stations, and tools. In quotes, she said, "We will be going through 3 different phases. The red phase is what we are in now, and that comes with the highest level of precautions," end quote. Clients will be asked to wait in their cars until their stylist is ready. A strict no-touching policy is being implemented. Retail displays will be off-limits, she said, and all product testers have been removed from the shelves. Stylists will let their clients in, opening and closing the door for them to minimize the number of hands that touch the door handle. In quotes, she said, "When guests come in, they will go to a welcome table where they will be given a mask and gloves. We are asking that all our clients only bring minimal stuff with them, like keys, cell phones, and wallet, and that they come to the appointment alone. Only the people receiving the services will be allowed in," end quote. Hamaden said she also is asking that clients leave their own masks in the car and use a mask provided by the salon. In quotes, she said, "I just want everything to be as sterile as possible, and I want to avoid any chance of contamination," end quote. As circumstances change and the threat becomes less pronounced, Hamaden said the salon will transition to a yellow phase and ultimately a green phase. In quotes, she said, "We're calling this the now normal," she said, "and as things change, will change," end quote. Other salons also are taking added precautions as they prepare to open. Jerry Akers, owner of 17 Great Clips locations in eastern Iowa and Nebraska, said in quotes, "We've been preparing for this for 6 weeks. We've got all our PPE and preparations pretty much ready to go," end quote. About 70% of the Iowa locations will reopen Friday, Akers said. The others will remain closed, as Akers said about 20% to 30% of the salon chain's roughly 200 employees have expressed concerns about returning to work. When they are ready to return, Akers said, the rest of the stores will open, likely in the next couple weeks. Unlike many other salon owners, Akers already has gone through the process of reopening. The chain's Nebraska locations opened over the past 10 days. In quotes, he said, We haven't had many problems. Our clients have been very aware of the situation, and most of the time, they are already taking extensive precautions on their own, end quote. Akers said employees will be required to wear masks and face shields are also available. All flat surfaces will be wiped down and sanitized often. Similarly, Kelsey Freshour, owner of Moods Salon and Spa at 905 3rd Street Southeast in downtown Cedar Rapids, said she and her employees have spent weeks getting ready to open. In quotes, she said, "We've spent the last several weeks cleaning and rearranging our space to accommodate the social distancing requirements, and we've eliminated our relaxation room and waiting areas," she said, end quotes. Clients there, too, will be asked to come alone and wait in their cars until a stylist is ready. In quotes, Freshour said, "We are also spacing out our appointments more to give stylists the time to sanitize their stations, chair, and tools, and clients will get their service and check out at that stylist station. Our front desk will be closed," end quote. Moods will open Saturday for haircuts and hair coloring. Other services such as manicures and pedicures, massages and facials, she said, are not certain yet. In quotes, she said, "It really is going to depend on what my employees are comfortable with. If a stylist or a cosmetologist is not comfortable coming back to work yet, I'm not going to force them," end quote. Stephanie Swanka-Seckel, co-owner of Skin Deep Salon and Spa at 2771 Oakdale Boulevard in Coralville, also is taking precautions. Skin Deep will reopen Friday, she said. Staff and guests will be required to wear masks, and like at other salons, clients will be asked to wait in their cars until the stylist is ready. Only 4 of the 8 stylist stations in the main area will be used per shift to accommodate social distancing. Swanka-Seckel said not all of the spa's services will be available right away, but added she thinks manicures, massages, and lash extensions will be offered. In quotes, she said, "It's going to be different, and I'm sure some people are going to be nervous about coming back, but we're also really excited to see our people again," end quote. And also from the front page, Reynolds allows more merchants to open with caveats. This is by Aaron Murphy for the Gazette. This article comes out of Johnston, declaring that new coronavirus cases are declining in most counties and hospitals are well-equipped. Governor Kim Reynolds announced Wednesday that hair salons and gyms across the state and restaurants in the hardest-hit counties can reopen starting Friday, but still must adhere to restrictions meant to keep COVID-19 in check. The latest order in Reynolds' phased-in approach of reopening Iowa businesses now matches restrictions in 22 counties that include Cedar Rapids and Iowa City, with previously relaxed restrictions in the state's other 77 counties. She also ordered that fitness centers, libraries, salons, and barbershops, tanning facilities, and tattoo parlors, among others, may open statewide. Those businesses, however, must operate at half their capacity and incorporate social distancing measures to ensure the safety of workers and customers. Bars, casinos, movie theaters, amusement parks, swimming pools, and playgrounds, among others, must remain closed at least through May 27th, according to the governor's order. Reynolds said she made the decision to reopen more businesses because Iowa's healthcare system is equipped to handle the spread of COVID-19 at its current rate. State public health officials see a downward trend in new cases in most counties, and expanded and targeted testing enables her administration to monitor and address virus activity. In quotes, she said, "These positive signs give me confidence that we're on the right path and we're ready to take additional steps forward. We can and must reopen our economy. We can restart in a stable, safe, and responsible way, and we can slow the spread and protect the health of Iowans and their livelihood and protect the healthcare system in the long run," end quote. Reynolds made the announcement on a day when the number of deaths in Iowa related to COVID-19 continued to climb. The state public health department Wednesday confirmed 17 new virus-related deaths, making this the deadliest 7-day stretch since the virus first was confirmed March 8th in Iowa. The state has averaged 12.4 deaths over the past 7 days. That average does not include the record daily tally of 19 deaths reported May 5th. Reynolds and a state public health spokeswoman said the deaths are a lagging indicator, meaning typically the most severe effects of the virus do not display until 7 to 8 days after a diagnosis. The state Wednesday also reported 388 Iowans are hospitalized because of the virus, 36 of whom were admitted in the past 24 hours. Those numbers have been plateauing, if not falling slightly, over the past week. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, cautioned this week in his testimony to the U.S. Senate that states and cities that reopen businesses too soon face the potential for serious public health consequences. In quotes, he said, "My concern that if some areas, cities, states, or what have you, jump over those various checkpoints and prematurely open up without having the capability of being able to respond effectively and efficiently, my concern is we will start to see little spikes that might turn into outbreaks." End quote. Reynolds said one of the reasons she felt confident moving ahead with her plan is because she said Iowa's healthcare system is able to deal with any sudden surge. In quotes, she said, "That's why we've done it in a very responsible, safe, and stable manner. That's why we're doing it in a phased approach. That's why we didn't just rip the Band-Aid off or flip a light switch. We're being very methodical in the way that we move forward." End quote. Her announcement of more relaxed mitigation requirements was met with criticism from the Iowa Democratic Party and the liberal issue advocacy organization Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement. Tom Mohan is the board president of Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement. In quotes, he said, "We urge the governor to start putting human life before corporate greed and reverse course now before more people get sick and die." End quote. The group said testing and contact tracing are woefully inadequate and asserted Reynolds, in quote, "isn't telling us the truth about the exponential spread of COVID-19 in Iowa." End quote. Reynolds defended her order, saying it was based on what she called encouraging data trends. In quotes, she said, "We're going to continue to do what we've been doing. We're going to base it on Iowa data. We're going to monitor on a daily basis, and we're going to be responsible in the way that we move forward. I have full confidence in Iowans, and I have full confidence in our businesses to do the right thing." End quote. And also from the front page today, Linn County officials worry testing is flawed. This is by Grace King for the Gazette. From Cedar Rapids, only 334 people were tested for the coronavirus disease over the first 4 days of a new drive-through site in Cedar Rapids, according to health officials, and a fairly large amount is in quotes, of those results were deemed inconclusive. Linn County Supervisor Stacy Walker said this on Wednesday. The Cedar Rapids testing location is one of 8 drive-through sites in Iowa that have opened or about to as part of the Test Iowa initiative. In announcing the initiative April 21st, Governor Kim Reynolds said that, in quotes, "the ability to conduct large-scale assessment and testing is critical to understand how prevalent this disease is and how it's evolving," end quote. The state signed a $26 million no-bid contract with a Utah company to supply more than 500,000 test kits and machines to help run the test. But Walker said almost 10% of the results from the Cedar Rapids location were found inconclusive, and that it's troubling to get that it took 5 to 6 days to get any results at all. In quotes, Walker said, "That's a very long time in between when these tests were administered and when our public health officials were able to begin acting on it and start contact tracing." End quote. Linn County Public Health requested to be in charge of contact tracing for Linn County residents tested at Test Iowa sites. The state has said the National Guard is helping at other sites. The site that opened May 7th in Cedar Rapids is limited to essential workers who qualify for testing after filling out an online assessment at testiowa.com. It is to continue operating for about 2 weeks. Test Iowa needs to figure out if the coronavirus tests are being administered incorrectly, if there's an issue with how samples are stored, or if it is the integrity of the test itself, Walker said. Reynolds spokesman Pat Garrett said the state is seeing 1% to 2% of Test Iowa results come back inconclusive, which is, in quotes, "not unique to Test Iowa," end quote. Garrett said people who get inconclusive test results should talk to their healthcare providers about whether they need to self-isolate. The process for validating the testing process at the state hygienic lab, which is checking out the equipment supplied by the Utah company, is not finished yet, Reynolds told reporters. In quotes, she said, "Hopefully by tomorrow we'll be able to have the system validated." She praised the lab for going above and beyond, end quote. Linn County Public Health Director Pramod Dwivedi said, "Public health is a team sport that requires local, state, and federal cooperation." In quotes, he said, "That's kind of breaking down here. It's very sad," end quote. As of noon Wednesday, a total of 863 Linn County residents had tested positive for the coronavirus, and 648 had recovered. There were 152 active cases, and 63 people have died as a result of the virus. And now from the Iowa Today page, virtual graduations set for Cornell Co. Mount Mercy. This is by Vanessa Miller for the Gazette. Graduation dreams for a 17-year-old Margaret Peterson when she started at Mount Mercy University 3 years ago involved a walk across the stage, diploma grab, and tassel turn. The commencement works. In quotes, Peterson, now 20, said, "This is not how any of us imagined," end quote. She said this in a brief application to be Mount Mercy's student commencement speaker for this first-of-its-kind online-only graduation. She, along with Mount Mercy's other 380-some undergraduates and 170 graduate students receiving degrees this Sunday, had their commencement visions upended in March with the swift arrival of COVID-19. It resulted in the shuttering of campuses, canceling of events, and curtailing of most aspects of normal life. In quotes, Peterson wrote in her commencement speaker pitch, "We cannot forget all the lasts that we missed out on. That last sports competition, that last music performance, that last all-nighter with your friends, that last time to say goodbye to the professors who helped make you the person you are today. We end our time at Mount Mercy with a set of lasts that we will never get to experience. But today marks the start of a whole lot more firsts," end quote. She wrote this striking a positive note that administrators said captured the campus spirit and landed her the speaking gig. A commencement committee for the Cedar Rapids-based private Catholic university uses a blind selection process to choose its student speaker from a collection of applications. And Nate Klein, vice president for student success, told the Gazette the committee was delighted to learn it had chosen Peterson, who, in quote, said, "who has been very involved on our campus in several leadership roles," end quote. In addition to serving as president of the MMU a cappella group, vice president of the Law and Politics Club, and member of the Academic Integrity Committee, she served as co-president of the campus's LGBTQ+ Alliance, which she helped revive. In quotes, she said, "It's been a little tricky navigating and trying to have an LGBTQ group on such a Catholic campus. But we have the Sisters of Mercy who live on campus with us, and they preach those mercy values of compassion and acceptance and love, and I really felt that," end quote. Peterson's postgraduate plans already have been delayed. She was supposed to leave for Kosovo with the Peace Corps later this month. Instead, Peterson aims to work locally and wait for travel restrictions to lift. In addition to Mount Mercy, other private and public colleges and universities across Iowa continue their virtual celebrations this weekend, such as the University of Iowa on Saturday, and Mount Vernon's Cornell College, which will hold its online commencement Sunday via Facebook with an interactive chat. Cornell President Jonathan Brand said in quotes, "We know this has been a tough time for all of our graduating seniors, and we wish the environment were different such that we could have everyone on campus this May to celebrate their many accomplishments. This will be a way we can start the celebration, and we'll continue it when we can all be together again for the in-person ceremony," end quote. Many colleges and universities have invited this spring's graduates to return to their respective campuses for a later in-person graduation. Co College in Cedar Rapids, like others, has posted commencement addresses on its website. In quotes, co-president David Michelini said in a pre-recorded address, "I may be speaking to you through video, but that doesn't change the fact that your graduation from Co is a singular event in the life of the college, one that we will long remember," end quote. And another story from the Iowa Today page, new senior living facility housing planned in Northeast Cedar Rapids. Hallmar Village will replace Mercy's Hallmar. This is by Grace King for the Gazette. Out of Cedar Rapids, a new senior living facility and a 279-unit neighborhood are being planned off C Avenue Northeast in far northeast Cedar Rapids. Hunter Skogman, operations manager with Skogman Homes, said Prairie Landing is the company's first new housing development in Cedar Rapids in 20 years. In quotes, he said, "We're really excited about this project, which will include single-family and multifamily units and five-unit townhouses." Skogman told this to the Cedar Rapids City Council on Tuesday during a meeting held over Zoom. The development also will include a four-story assisted living facility, Hallmar Village, to be built by Mercy Medical Center and Presbyterian Homes and Services, near Echo Hill Presbyterian Church, 9000 C Avenue Northeast. The facility will provide long-term care for older adults and people with dementia, as well as an independent living and assisted living apartments, according to a news release. The new Hallmar Village will replace the Mercy Hallmar Center at 701 10th Street Southeast in Cedar Rapids, which opened in 1960. Skogman expects the housing portion of the development to be built over the next 10 years, averaging 15 to 20 units a year. The goal, he said, is to start moving dirt in spring 2021, with building to begin mid-summer to late fall of next year. In quotes, he said, "We don't foresee a dramatic increase in traffic in the short run." End quote. The homes will be built on 80 acres of the site, with a density of 4.8 units per acre. Hallmar Village will be built on the other 40 acres, Skogman said. Councilmember Scott Overland said it is good to see a large development planned for the Northeast Quadrant. In quotes, he said, "It's been a long time since we've seen that in that quadrant of the city. I'm excited to see that addition." End quote. David Haug, a city development specialist, said the proposed development is consistent with the city's comprehensive plan objectives, which allow residential and commercial development along C Avenue Northeast, which is identified as a growth area. He does not anticipate increased safety issues because of increased traffic along C Avenue, which sees about 3,600 vehicles a day, and has had only one crash in the past 5 years. There are some concerns about the C Avenue and East Robbins Road intersection south of the development, Hogue said. A traffic study will be included with the site's detailed plan, which will determine whether any improvements are needed on C Avenue, such as turn lanes. The City Council approved amending the city's land use map for the development from urban low density to an urban medium density. It also changed the zoning for Echo Hill Presbyterian Church from agricultural to a suburban residential low-flex district and a suburban mixed-use community center district. A second and third reading of the ordinances will be considered at the May 26th council meeting. And from the top stories page, legislature to resume June 3rd. This is by James Q. Lynch for the Gazette. The Iowa legislature has again pushed back plans for reconvening its 2020 session, which has been interrupted by the coronavirus pandemic. Lawmakers suspended their session March 16th for 30 days as part of the effort to slow the spread of COVID-19 and protect the health of legislators, staff, and the public. After pushing that back until this Friday, the Legislative Council now plans to vote to wait until June 3rd to resume its in-person work at the State House in Des Moines. Suspending the session was necessary to ensure the state's healthcare infrastructure was not overwhelmed, said Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer, Republican from Ankeny. In quotes, he said, "It is now time for the Senate to resume its constitutional duty." End quote. Speaker Pat Grassley, Republican from New Hartford, said in quotes, "Iowans have stepped up and done their part to slow the spread of COVID-19. It is also time for the legislature to return to Des Moines so we can complete our work." End quote. Legislators have yet to agree on a state budget for the fiscal year that starts July 1, but the resumed session may go beyond that. In his statement, Whitver said lawmakers also needed to, quotes, "implement policy priorities," end quote. A council meeting is planned for Thursday afternoon to approve resuming the session at 9 a.m. June 3rd. Several precautions will be taken, including requiring staff members and the public to undergo a health screening before entering the Capitol, and recommending that social distancing guidelines be followed, as well as the use of face masks, which will be provided to those who want one. Hand sanitizer stations will be positioned throughout the Capitol. The Senate will limit the number of individuals on the floor to only senators and necessary staff. All Senate and House committee meetings will be live streamed from the House and Senate chambers. For subcommittee meetings, the public will be encouraged to submit written comments on legislation through the legislature's website, legis.iowa.gov. The Capitol will reopen to the public starting May 18th from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., Monday through Saturday. The Capitol is closed to tour groups. Individuals will be encouraged to maintain social distancing and not gather in groups larger than 10. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Thursday, May 14th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. In other notices, from Bluffton, Rose Marie Keith Henry, age 94, died Monday, May 11th. The Schluter Ballack Funeral Home in Decorah is caring for her family. From Independence, Patricia A. Cherry, age 87, died Tuesday, May 12th. The Reef Family Center in Independence is caring for her family. Also from Independence, William Bill B. Meister, age 63, died Monday, May 11th. The Reef Family Center in Independence is caring for his family. From Kelowna, E. Jean Miller, age 86, died Tuesday, May 12th. The Yoder Powell Funeral Home in Kelowna is caring for his family. From Kelowna, Kenneth R. Shipper, age 73, died Monday, May 11th. The Yoder Powell Funeral Home in Kelowna is caring for his family. From Monticello, Betty Lou Dirks, age 84, died Tuesday, May 12th. The Getch Funeral Home in Monticello is caring for her family. West Liberty, Carol Chandler Klein, age 79, died Tuesday, May 12th. The Henderson Barker Funeral Home in West Liberty is caring for her family. Thomas Bakkenstedt, age 47, passed away at home in Scottsdale, Arizona on May 4th. A celebration of Tom's life will be held at a later date. Jerry King Soap from Monticello passed away Saturday, May 9th at the age of 78. Jerry passed away at the Monticello Nursing and Rehabilitation Center following an extended illness. Private family services will be held graveside on Friday, May 15th at Oakwood Cemetery in Monticello. The Getch Funeral Home is assisting Jerry's family with arrangements. You can sign Jerry's guestbook at getchonline.com. Dorothy Sampson, age 96, of North English, died Tuesday, May 12th at the English Valley Care Center in North English. Memorial graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, May 18th. Burial will be at South English Cemetery. Due to the current coronavirus pandemic, there will be no visitation. A memorial fund has been established for English Valley Care Center. Powell Funeral Home and Cremation Service in North English is caring for Dorothy and her family. Tributes may be made at powellfuneralhomes.com. Mary Lou Mead, age 90, of Iowa City, passed away peacefully on May 10th, surrounded by her family on Mother's Day. Visitation will be from 1 to 3 p.m. Sunday, May 17th, at Lensing Funeral Service in Iowa City. Social distancing guidelines will be in place as you come into the funeral home. A private funeral mass and burial will be held on Monday in Iowa City. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the family. Go to lensingfuneral.com. Dennis Ray Henderson, age 70, of Davidson, North Carolina, passed away on May 1st. A celebration of his life will be held in the Lake Norman area when it is safe to socially interact, and he will be laid to rest in Independence, Iowa, at a date to come later. To leave an online condolence, please go to reeffamilycenter.com under obituaries. Melody Ann Bakken, age 53, of North Liberty, passed away peacefully on May 7th at her home, following a courageous 9-year battle with osteosarcoma. She was surrounded by her loving family. To celebrate her life just as she wanted, services will be held at Terry Trueblood Recreation Area after the coronavirus pandemic restrictions have been lifted. In lieu of flowers, donations may be directed to the family to be distributed to organizations that were important to Melody. To share a memory of Melody or send your condolences to the family, go to lensingfuneral.com, where service details will be posted when a date has been set. And now we turn to the Insight page. Today's editorial from the Gazette editorial board is Reynolds Obscures Death Toll. Without an explanation, Governor Kim Reynolds recently started leaving out daily COVID-19 fatality numbers at her news conferences. Her office also stopped sending daily news releases with the death count. Asked about the omissions on Wednesday, Reynolds says it's because that data is available on the state's coronavirus website. The administration launched a revamped website last week, part of what the governor calls her transparent and data-driven response to the pandemic. The new coronavirus.iowa.gov has some improved features, but lacks in accessibility. Death figures for each county and 24-hour statewide death counts are obscured or hidden. The website shows some top-line data, but doesn't illustrate hotspots and trends or prominently display the number of new cases in the past 24 hours. Maybe these are innocent oversights, or maybe it's something worse. Government leaders politicizing the flow of information. Reynolds last week went on something of a victory tour, publishing a national guest column and going to a White House event to tout Iowa's success in addressing the coronavirus epidemic. It would have been a bad look for Reynolds to come home and announce the second and third highest COVID-19 death counts to date, as with the 18 and 17 deaths reported Tuesday and Wednesday, at the same time she was announcing new reopening procedures. It would have been a bad look, but a necessary one. Iowans are not well served when our leaders shy away from acknowledging the wave of deaths crashing across the state. Instead of providing pertinent, up-to-date information, Reynolds is opening her news conferences with lengthy filibusters, repeating lines Iowans have heard from her several times before. Without reliable information from the state government, citizens are turning to news outlets and independent analysts that are filling in what the state has left out. Without a common set of data, we risk pushing Iowans further into self-made echo chambers where the information may come with a partisan tint. The governor is asking Iowans to take personal responsibility and make individual choices for their own health, but she's not giving us the localized information that would empower us to thoughtfully make such decisions. She trusts Iowans to be responsible, she says, but she apparently does not trust us enough to tell the full truth. Daily updates on how many Iowans have been killed by this terrible disease might make us uncomfortable, and they should. That is absolutely necessary if Iowans are going to understand the gravity of the situation. Again, that's the view of the Gazette editorial board. And now the community letters. We have two today. First one is from Pastor John Shada of Independence. Thanks for efforts, Governor Kim Reynolds. On April 27th, Governor Kim Reynolds gave the okay for churches to reopen once again for public worship. Despite not having a 100% guarantee about the future, and who does, she felt it time to begin the attempt of getting things moving again. I applaud the governor for this, and our congregation was excited to have church once again. Again, that's from Pastor John Shada of Independence. The next letter is from Lynn Paula Prohaska from Florence, Arizona. She said, vote by mail and have faith in postal service. Recently, powerful people in our government questioned the integrity and ability of the U.S. Postal Service to deliver upon a fair and representative vote by mail campaign in the upcoming 2020 presidential election. As postmaster of Cedar Rapids from 2001 to 2009, I was an active member in moving vote by mail forward in eastern Iowa. Vote by mail is an extension of the absentee ballot process, which has been used for decades in our country. I encourage Iowans to have faith in the systems that are in place. Do not hesitate to trust in those who serve you daily. Remember, they are your neighbors, your friends, and your family. And most of all, they transport, process, and deliver your mail. It's as simple as going online to www.sos.iowa.gov and downloading an absentee ballot request form. I have voted by mail since the day it was offered, and I will proudly do so in 2020. Again, that's from Lynn Paula Prohaska of Florence, Arizona. And also from the Insight page, The 24-Hour Doorman by Todd Dorman. We're all gamblers in Kim's casino. Iowa's gaming parlors are closed. There's no sports betting without sports. Slots are silent. But thanks to Governor Kim Reynolds, Iowa has plenty of high-stakes gambling action in every county, city, and burg. We're all rolling the dice now in Kim's COVID casino. We have seen some positive curve-bending lately in the state's effort to mitigate the spread of the coronavirus pandemic. Hospitalizations have been declining for days, although cases and deaths continue to mount. There's been more testing and contact tracing, key steps to containing the virus and bending the curve even further. But testing is just ramping up. Iowa still is testing thousands fewer daily than needed. Test Iowa's effort has been slow out of the gate and plagued by problems. And yet the Utah tech firms behind the testing already have hit the jackpot. We could stand on this hand, see how it plays out for a few more weeks. The curve may indeed flatten, remain disciplined, play it safe. Instead, on Wednesday, Reynolds announced more business reopenings, while rolling back protective measures in all 99 counties starting Friday. She's gambling that we won't see a second sharp surge in virus cases, even as she maintains her own modified quarantine after mingling with unmasked White House officials on her recent victory tour. She's also quit sending out detailed daily reports on virus numbers. Don't fixate on deaths. They're lagging indicators. Have we reached the peak? Probably. Maybe. The predictive model still is under wraps. But it's no guts, no glory at COVID Casino. It's time to get back in the game. Big bucks and political power are on the table. Baby needs a new pair of shoes, and there are plenty of ventilators for Granny. Sure, without more testing and tracing, we're flying in fog, perhaps on a casino owner's borrowed jet. But oh, what a rush. How will it all turn out? The suspense is killing us. Standing the economy back up is necessary, but there will be no real sustained recovery if Iowans are unconvinced we've handled the pandemic. Picking the economy over public health is a false bet. Solving the public health problem is key to economic recovery and restoring confidence. There's certainly an economic risk to sticking with protective measures longer and resisting more reopening for a couple more weeks. But consider the consequences of pulling that big reopening slot machine arm too soon. A second spike and a return to restrictions would be even more devastating. Instead of bouncing back, Iowa's health and economic problems would intensify while more Iowans fall ill. Betting the lives of our most vulnerable on the personal responsibility of others before we know more about the pandemic's grip here is a reckless wager, leaving thousands of Iowans and their loved ones in fearful limbo. They can't simply adjust and move on. Dr. Anthony Fauci warned the U.S. Senate this week that rapid reopening could have serious consequences. Instead, Iowa's putting its money on the whiplash wisdom of the casino wizard in the White House, who is willing to bet our lives on his reelection prospects. Our guts, his glory. So we're all gamblers now, living in the COVID casino. Win big or buy the farm. Masks optional. And again, that was the view from Todd Dorman in the 24-Hour Dorman column. The guest column on the Insight page today is from Paul Pate and a group of county auditors. This is the Iowa Secretary of State Paul Pate's Auditors Working Group, which consists of auditors from Grundy, Sioux, Clayton, Woodbury, Union, Carroll, Scott, Clay, Emmett, Blackhawk, Ringgold, Winnebago, and Page counties. This guest column is entitled, Decide How to Vote and We'll Make It Safe. Our national dialogue is consumed with discussion about health, safety, freedoms, and liberties. There is no doubt Iowans are concerned about these important matters. One of the ways you can contribute is by exercising your right to vote in the June 2nd primary election. Primaries determine which candidates represent their party in the November general election. We encourage every eligible Iowan who chooses to be a member of the Republican or Democratic parties to vote on June 2nd. And you should vote in a way that makes you feel safe and empowered. Here are the ways the Secretary of State's office and county auditors across Iowa are working to help you feel secure when voting. First way is to vote absentee by mail. This year, for the first time ever, Secretary of State's office proactively sent absentee ballot request forms to all active registered voters. Fear of contracting COVID-19 shouldn't be a barrier to voting. Every eligible voter should know they have access to cast a ballot, even during a public health emergency. This is one way to make voting more accessible despite the pandemic. All voters need to do is mail in a completed request form. Once you receive the ballot, fill it out and return via mail. All postage is paid. Remember, the last day to request an absentee ballot by mail is May 22nd. Absentee ballots are protected by state laws and rules that determine how they must be handled. Ballots are placed inside envelopes that must be signed and sealed by the voter. Steps are taken to ensure mailed ballots are as private as those cast inside a polling place. Voters can track the status of their absentee ballot online. Second way is to vote absentee in person. All 99 county auditors accept absentee ballots in person ahead of the June 2nd primary. Because of social distancing measures, auditors have adjusted usual methods for handling this process. Counties have instituted drop-off boxes curbside and drive-through voting opportunities. Contact your county auditor for more information about voting absentee in person. Other ways to vote in person on June 2nd. Going to your polling place and filling out a ballot feels patriotic. Make no mistake, polls will be open June 2nd. However, many locations are being consolidated for the June primary. We are taking numerous steps to protect voters and poll workers. Secretary of State's office is providing hand sanitizer, gloves, and masks. Additionally, each county is receiving a $300 grant for every precinct to cover the costs of other materials to help reduce the risk of the spread of COVID-19. The Secretary of State's office and all 99 county auditors are committed to securing your health and safety while making the voting process available. We are all collaborating to promote social distancing and cleanliness in the physical spaces where you vote. For more information about your voting options, visit voterready.iowa.gov. Only you can decide how to cast your ballot. Vote in a way that makes you feel safe and empowered. And from the Iowa Today section, Ernst plans in-person fundraiser on June 3rd. It's among the first congressional events planned since the pandemic. This is by James Q. Lynch for the Gazette. Out of Cedar Rapids, Senator Joni Ernst plans to kick off the general election campaign with an in-person fundraiser. The Iowa Republican, who is running for re-election, plans an in-person fundraising event for June 3rd, the day after Iowa's primary election. She will face the winner of a four-way Democratic primary in a race that has been rated Leans Republican. The Washington, D.C. event would be hosted by the Jobs, Opportunity, and New Ideas PAC. It also spells out Joni, as in Joni Ernst. The coronavirus pandemic hasn't stopped political fundraising, but limited much of it to virtual events, along with myriad online appeals. Ernst appears to be among the first members of Congress to return to in-person fundraising. That troubled the Iowa Democratic Party, which called the fundraiser typical for, in quotes, a Washington politician who will do anything to stay in power, end quote. The Iowa Democratic Party spokesman Jeremy Bush said about Ernst, in quotes, "It's extremely troubling, the complete disregard for medical experts by putting people needlessly at risk with an in-person fundraiser in the middle of a pandemic," end quote. Attendance, of course, is by choice, and according to the invitation, the Ernst campaign is, in quotes, "closely monitoring the COVID-19 developments and will adhere to CDC guidelines," end quote. The invitation was sent before the mayor of Washington extended the district's stay-at-home order and ban on mass gatherings through June 8th. Again, according to the invitation, if an in-person gathering is not possible, the Ernst campaign will host a virtual meeting and, in quotes, plan an in-person gathering at a later date, end quote. And we turn to the sports section. Not a lot of sports going on, as you know, so we have an article about high school track and field called No Coming Out Party. Kingston Stadium's return to high-stakes track is on hold. It's by Jeff Linder for the Gazette. Chris and Carrie Deem celebrated their 21st anniversary April 17th. They did so with takeout from Leonardo's Pizza and Restaurant, an impromptu picnic outside Kingston Stadium. In quotes, Deem, who's the athletic director at Cedar Rapids Jefferson, said, "We just looked out over the stadium. It kind of bummed me out," end quote. Today was going to be a memorable day for the historic stadium on the southwest side of town. A reunion with relevance on the Iowa high school track and field scene. Cedar Rapids Kennedy AD Aaron Stecker said, in quotes, "It was going to be our coming out party. We were all excited about it. Chris and Grant," that's Schultz, who's the Cedar Rapids Washington AD, "and me. I was excited about all three of us working together and making this such a big day," end quote. Instead, the track season was a victim of the coronavirus pandemic, and Kingston's reintroduction as a postseason site for the sport will have to wait another year. State qualifying meets, district for boys, regionals for girls, were scheduled throughout the state for today, and a renovated Kingston was chosen as one of six sites in Class 4A. It had sat vacant on state qualifying day for years because its seven-lane structure made it a non-candidate for hosting. Now, despite a $2 million plus facelift, in which the artificial turf was replaced and the track was widened to eight lanes, the stadium sits quiet again. The Cedar Rapids Community School District, quote from Stecker, said, "It was important work that the district supported. It looks super nice, and it's going to be a premier Eastern Iowa track facility," end quote. But next year. According to Stecker, it takes about 50 volunteers to run an important meet like a state qualifier. In quotes, he said, "You need to have adults, and you need to have adults that know what they're doing," end quote. Jefferson, Kennedy, and Washington annually host their own boys and girls invitational meets in April. Deem, Stecker, and Schultz were hoping a well-run meet today would serve as a dress rehearsal and an incentive for something new and bigger in 2021. In quotes, Stecker said, "A major Cedar Rapids invitational is something we keep talking about. We've got the seating, we've got the 8-lane track, we have the great throwing rings, but that might be on hold now until 2022, end quote. Other story on the sports page is that the tailgate tour returns virtually for Iowa State's Cyclones tailgate tour, coming to the homes of all Cyclone fans. In order to continue this event during these uncertain times, the Iowa State Athletic Department announced on Wednesday it will host a 2020 virtual Cyclone tailgate tour on May 20th, bringing coaches into the living room of any interested fan. The interactive event starts at 5 p.m. at cyclones.com or at the department's Facebook and Twitter pages. John Walters will MC the event with live interviews involving athletics director Jamie Pollard and coaches Matt Campbell, football, Steve Prom, men's basketball, Bill Fennelly, women's basketball, Christy Johnson Lynch, volleyball, and Kevin Dressler, wrestling. Participants are encouraged to RSVP in advance for a chance to win prizes during the live show. And from the living section, article called Food for the Frontlines, restaurants and individuals donating hundreds of meals to hospital staff. It's by Allison Gowans for the Gazette. On a recent morning, Elias and his staff at Pizzas, Mediterranean, and American Cuisine in Hiawatha were packing up dozens of boxed lunches to go. Pita and gyro meat and hummus and salad. They weren't filling orders to bring in money for the business. They were donating the meals to staff at the Hiawatha Care Center. This was the latest in a string of donations Elias has made, sending hundreds of meals to the frontline staff at Mercy Medical Center and St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. Sending a little bit of food is the best way he knows how to help, Elias said, to give back to the community that has supported his business. In quotes, he said, "Without them, we can't keep going. They're taking a big risk to be there for us. I can't do that. They're like heroes right now," end quote. He's not alone. Both of Cedar Rapids hospitals have been inundated with donations of meals to their staff, some from individuals who order from local restaurants, some directly from the restaurant's owners themselves, and some from larger corporations. Isaiah Corbin, the director of volunteer services at Mercy, said in quotes, "It makes a huge impact. A lot of times they're not necessarily expecting a meal, and when you hand them a meal, it's just a big sigh of relief. It brings a smile to their faces. They've called us Santa Claus at times when we're handing them out. Food is something that fuels us and gives us great joy," end quote. Corbin said donations come in all shapes and sizes, from trays of cinnamon rolls from Oscar's restaurant to hundreds of take-and-bake meals for staff to take home that True North dropped off recently. In quotes, he said, "One of the best ways to the hearts of our caregivers is through their stomachs. We've had over 50 individuals and businesses donate meals, some as large as 200, some as small as 20 meals. It's really been overwhelming support from our community," end quote. Mary Klinger, the president of the St. Luke's Foundation, said meal donations have been pouring in there as well. In quotes, she said, "It's really every weekend, every day, it's around the clock. I can't tell you just how amazing that outpouring of love and support for our community is," end quote. She said for staff working in stressful situations, a hot meal is a little bit of comfort. In quotes, she said, "It has been amazing for the team members on the front lines when they don't have a lot of time to get something to eat, especially if they're not able to get home. A lot of them work long hours. I think it just warms their heart. We get emails every single day thanking us at the foundation and those who are donating the meals." At University of Iowa hospitals and clinics, direct meals for staff aren't being accepted. The reason is logistical concerns. In quotes, Doug Robertson, director of food and nutrition at the hospital, said, "Meal donations are challenging for us as far as food safety and for the volume of our staff. We serve about 5,000 people in our cafeterias each day right now," end quote. Instead, the hospital launched a pilot program, buying food from local restaurants to sell at a 25% discount to staff in the hospital's cafeterias. The discounts are offset by donations to an employee relief fund. In quotes, he said, "It's kind of a win-win where the hospital can help out restaurants in the community and staff as well," end quote. They worked with 21 local restaurants, buying the food at menu price from them, 200 portions at a time, to be sold in cafeterias. In quotes, Robertson said, "It's just really to improve staff morale. When we started this a couple weeks ago, there was a lot of anxiety. If we can bring in ribs from Jimmy Jack's or mac and cheese from Big Grove, food makes people happy," end quote. People interested in donating to Mercy staff may contact Corbin at 319-775-2030 or via email at icorbin@mercycare.org. or visit mercycare.org/healthyliving/protect-yourself-from-illness/supporting-mercy-caregivers-during-COVID-19. That's a long one. People interested in donating to St. Luke's staff may call 319-369-7716 or visit unitypoint.org/CedarRapids/St. Luke's Foundation.ASPX. Both hospitals are also seeking donations for their employee support funds, as is UIHC. People can donate to that fund at donate.givetoiowa.org. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Thursday, May 14th. I've been your reader, Carrie Craig. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.